Welcome everyone back to Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. Today, Brandon Escobar. Assuming I got that one right, you have one of the easier names in the world.
Yeah, no relation to Pablo.
Cyb, that's too bad. Probably do that. That would make this show a lot cooler.
Yeah,
that would make this. Yeah, cybersecurity in the oil and gas kind of gas station industry. So that brings you into like three layers of security. I'm assuming there's the physical security where we have to make sure guns don't enter the store, and there's that layer of security, which I have no clue if you deal with that whatsoever. Because security back in the day used to be just cameras and stuff. A little more advanced today. Anywho, welcome to the show. How did you get started in this world of technology? What was your first computer? Did you do anything before the internet was? Were you even alive before the internet was invented?
I think I was alive in 1996.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it really depends on where you draw the line. ARPANET, does that count? That doesn't really count, right? You were born in 96?
I was. I am 27. I'll be 28 in July. Actually, 28, 3 months from yesterday.
That's so absurd. I graduated college in high school, 95. So, okay. So I graduated high school. I had a 386 with a DVD drive that came out, and you weren't even born yet. So yes. Yeah, so no, that doesn't count. You were not born.
I was putting VHS tapes in the video player, if that helps.
Yeah. That's a little bit. So you were a family that was behind the times in technology.
Just a little bit.
No, I think DVDs were out by then. Remember the DVD thing? That was a thing.
Yeah.
It was fun. I do.
And then the shift to Blu-ray and all that other fun stuff.
So anywho, you have already a fairly extensive IT history. How'd that all happen? Since you were born in an era where IT was a real thing kind of already. So by the time you were 16, it was a real thing, right? It was kind of like a step above the audio visio guy that would roll like a TV or something into a room.
Yeah, I tell people that, like, you know, I have a couple of brothers. My baby brother really grew up with all the new technology that we have, right? So he was born around the time of like the iPhone. So he's grown up with a lot of the newer stuff. Mm-hmm. I grew up in a time where we still had, you know, like phones on the wall and, you know, long coiled cables and all that kind of stuff and coax and everything like that.
That was fun. The old phone thing that was all wound up into a big ball.
Made thing, yeah. Limited movement.
Rambo 2 is coming on TV. I've got to be able to talk on the phone and watch TV at the same time.
Yeah.
First blood. Second blood, whatever it was.
I got my start really in IT. What's funny is through high school, I was like really big on, I wanted to be a lawyer because I loved history. So I was like, I'll go get my history degree and be a lawyer. And then I was like, I don't know, these computer things are pretty cool, you know? And so I took a robotics class in my senior year of high school. So it was just very straightforward programming and working with just these little robots, make them like flip over and everything. And I loved that. So I went to California State University, Stanislaus, and that was 2014. So my first year, I graduated in 2018 with my bachelor's in computer science. And then, I had a little gap in between graduating college and getting my first IT job. So I was like, well, I might as well be a little bit productive and go get my master's degree. So applied at a bunch of different schools, ended up getting into cybersecurity at Johns Hopkins. What was funny was I was between data science and cybersecurity. And I was like, well, do I want to work with like data, or do I want to do cool, like, you know, spy stuff with cybersecurity side of things?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very glad I went with cybersecurity. No shade being thrown at data science people.
Oh, no, we can throw all kinds of stuff. It's really, you guys are boring numbers people that are really think you're wicked, wicked important. And really, we just throw you by the wayside and say, well, we got to have a data guy. So bring him in. No, I only say that because I have a lot of friends that are like, I literally have friends that have PhDs in some sort of data science, and they talk like it's, you know, like the most important thing in the world. I have no clue what they're talking about. It's something about some weird coding language or something, Python or something. They talk about snakes. I don't know.
Yeah. Things like that. I loved about cybersecurity especially was that human element. And, you know, both in dealing with adversaries who are on the other side of, you know, trying to get into systems, but also the human element of like the people that I'm working with mm-hmm. in whatever organization I'm in. Like I'm on the security team. If I'm on the security team, you know, I'm doing the technical side of things, but really everybody's part of the security team because we all kind of have a responsibility to work safely with all that.
Yeah, you have a responsibility for making other people realize that you guys are actually also human also, and not just like this department that is wasting everyone's money.
Correct. And it's really, you know, my dad, he's worked in sales like pretty much his whole life. And he's taught me a lot about him. He's taught me a lot about communication. And I had a professor in college. It was my senior year at CSU Stanislaus. We had to do this big, like 20-minute presentation. And she was like, you know, I know a lot of you might be kind of introverted. You know, you might not be, you might not like presenting, but you have to be able to present your ideas to people. You have to be able to share your knowledge and make it, you know, consumable for people who might not have as much technical depth, you know? Yeah.
Why should we care about what you're saying, nerd?
Exactly. Here's why.
Yes.
Here, let me break it down for you.
Let me dumb it down for your meager mind to try and digest this stuff that's way above you. No, yes. So here's it. You need to speak with people in a way that is not condescending to them.
Right.
That also shows that you have a soul and you are able to think outside of the box.
Mm-hmm.
So you've really been in like, would you say you've been in the work world actually like in the positions that you're in for, I don't know, what, 6 years or so?
So I started my first IT job I got at the end of 2019. So right before COVID, I was the systems administrator at a local control systems integrator here in Modesto, California.
Okay.
And COVID hit, next be to God, they were up in the cloud, they had that foresight. So like from my side of things, you know, I didn't have to transition a bunch of stuff up into the cloud, but I was able to get a lot of exposure to a lot of different technologies. And not only that, but how those technologies are impacting the business, right? The business processes, because it's kind of like, we have a process that we need to do here at work. So what tool are we going to use to like make it happen?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So and what's your thought process around that? And really where I'm actually a little bit fascinated is how fast you got to where you are in that short of a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Being honest, and how did you get any sort of, I don't know, how big, do you have a team of people?
I do. I have, so far I've got a couple people in my current department.
Uh-huh.
And we're looking to grow just because the business itself, I mean, Boyett Petroleum, I mean, we're growing like crazy right now. And it's really just trying to, my job since I've been coming in has really been trying to scale our IT department to meet the needs of the business as a whole, which is just, you know, exploded in the past few years.
At Dissecting Popular IT Nerds, we expect to win and we expect our IT directors to win. And one of those areas where we know that we can help you win is internet service providers. As an IT director tasked with managing internet connectivity, few vendor relationships can prove more painfully frustrating than the one with your internet service provider. The array of challenges seems never ending, from unreliable uptime and insufficient bandwidth to poor customer service and hidden fees. It's like getting stuck in rush hour traffic. Dealing with ISPs can try one's patience even on the best of days. So whether you are managing one location or 100 locations, our back office support team and vendor partners are the best in the industry. And the best part about this is none of this will ever cost you a dime due to the partnership and the sponsors that we have behind the scenes at Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. Let us show you how we can manage away the mediocrity and hit it out of the park. We start by mapping all of the available fiber routes, and we use our 1.2 billion in combined customer buying power and massive economy of scale to map all of your locations, to overcome construction fees, to use industry historical data, to encourage providers to compete for the lowest possible pricing, to negotiate the lowest rates guaranteed, and to provide fast response times in hours, not days. And we leverage aggregators and wholesale relationships to ensure you get the best possible pricing available in the marketplace. And on top of all of this, you get proactive network monitoring and proactive alerts so that you're not left calling 1-800-GO-POUND-SAND to enter in a ticket number and wonder, why is my internet connection down? In short, we are the partner that you have always wanted, who understands your needs, your frustrations, and knows what you need without you having to ask. So we're still human, but we are some of the best, and we aim to win. This all starts with a value discovery call where we find out what you have, why you have it, and what's on your roadmap. All you need to do is email internet@popularit.net and say, I want help managing all of my internet garbage. Please make my life easier, and we'll get right on it for you. Have a wonderful day.
There's going to be, this is just me thinking out of the box, I think there's going to be a transition from the old school IT guys that are going to hopefully retire and have something to retire on and do something. And one of the questions we ask a lot is like, kind of, what's the end game for IT? And the more new school people that grew up with technology, that didn't grow up and learn how the internet actually came about and what a network card is and all that type of stuff. So you're of the new school, and the fact that you're in a leadership position as soon as you have been, there's something there that's going on. So I don't know what it is. Maybe you can pinpoint it. Maybe it's dad was a sales guy, so I learned to talk to people and sell myself. I mean, honestly, that really could be it. It could be, so that makes me more empathetic to people because the reality is, very successful salespeople, good salespeople, treat it as profession, and they treat it as really filling a need, kind of acting like a doctor, really helping people sell a solution, versus the unfortunate stereotype of the scumbags of the world, like the Wolf of Wall Street, whatever his name was. I don't know. What's this guy? Why can't I remember that guy's name? Jordan or something. Whatever his name is, that scumbag. And so it's because it's really not what it is. So you may have learned, you know, without even knowing it, from your father, like how to be empathetic, talk with people, have this leadership. I don't know. Maybe you tell me, what's the key?
Yeah. So, I mean, in a lot of ways, I think it's just the body of knowledge that I've been able to learn from. And it's my ability to communicate that, right? So you really do have to be able to sell yourself as an IT person.
First thing I want to know, what's the body of language that you're referring to? Because it's a little bit vague. I just need to know.
That's true. So, I mean, with regard to what I've done, you know, educationally and experience-wise, right? Mm-hmm. So I've worked at several different organizations now. I've worked private, I've worked public, and I've gotten a really broad perspective on how private sector does things versus public sector. There's things I like in both. There's things that I think could be improved in both, right?
So, and experience, then, in short, get your hands dirty, get in there, figure out how people build their networks and different applications they use, where things are broken, what things work better.
Yes.
Okay.
And gotcha. I do think it's an attitude of being willing to just be flexible and adaptable to a situation, right? Like the solution you have in mind, you might be trying to put a square peg through a round hole, so to speak, right? Mm-hmm. And it might be there's a better solution out there. And being open to the idea that things that you've put in, they might not be doing the best job. It's good to be flexible and adaptable. With regards to cybersecurity, that in and of itself, I think, has been tremendously helpful, just because as an industry, there's a shortage of people in cybersecurity, and it's a
expertise. Really? I'm gonna challenge that. I think there is an overflowing flood of every single person, like people saying, I'm gonna be a real estate agent. Yeah, there's mm-hmm. a million real estate agents on every street corner, but there's only one or two that right. actually know what they're doing and care. So I'm going to challenge it, but I'm going to hold that thought for a second, because you were finishing one other thing when I asked you like how you got to where you were so fast. And you said one was like experience. And then I kind of cut you off, and there was some other key piece there, which was like the leadership piece, which I want to know how you gained that, because I don't think people overnight learn how to, people have said before, referring to end users, herding cats is one of the terms that shows up in our urban dictionary. We're putting together an urban dictionary where I had AI, well, I didn't have AI, Greg the Frenchman, my producer, had AI scrape all of the shows and pull all of the terms that IT directors use. One of them was herding cats, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah.
Anywho, so how did you learn to herd cats so fast? And then not only that, get other people to help you herd the cats, i.e. systems admin people, help desk people. And yeah, how'd you make that jump?
In a way, you almost have to take a role of kind of like mediating between the two groups of people, right? So in a way, like as a IT director, you know, this is my first management level position. So I had to learn a few things. I had to learn how to start managing people. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we're using herding cats, that's, you know, one set of that. The other is really,
I don't really
managing managing expectations with, you know, people in different departments.
Okay.
And really trying to gauge what they need, right? But people can kind of communicate a need that they have, and you just kind of have, you really have to look at how to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So I have many of those myself, still trying to figure them out. Okay. And to kind of like pull this full circle to bring it back to even the question that was before that, because I get very ADD and I drink a lot of coffee. The new school layer of IT leadership that I'm seeing come about is kind of the new school. I don't know if you're a gamer, and I'm not trying to pigeonhole you
into
a gamer. Okay. So the kind of the new gamer group herd of people, right? Because the older generation, what'd we have? Atari, NES. We had Mike Tyson's Punch Out, which was awesome.
Right.
But you guys have like a whole new layer of like, I was on Twitch the other day and we were doing this and that. It's like a whole new layer of coders. It's a whole new, I don't know if you want to call them millennials. I don't, you know, whatever you want to call the different generations, however they want to pigeonhole us, you know. I'm already trying to make myself younger than I am, but there's going to be this changing of the guard, so to speak. And I think you kind of represent that a little bit, because just straight up your age and the position that you're in, I don't know if there's any insights to be gained from that or anything. I guess my question would be is, how is it coming in IT, being younger and maybe possibly having to deal with the stereotypes of, well, you're young and we're old, so we know better. Can you just get the job done?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Makes sense. Like, yeah. How do you gain some level of authority that's like, hey, look, I know this stuff. This is what we need to be careful of. This is how we should do this. This is how we can help you do more with less. Have you seen any layers where technology can help scale the business?
Yeah. I mean, for a lot of that, and from what I've seen relating to that, it's a lot of things have just been, for example, like on-premise so long that, you know, this is just the way that we've done things, right? It's how it's done. Okay. That's fine. The process itself might not be the problem. It's the tools and how we're applying them that we could probably make some improvements, right? So, you know, people want to be able to do what they've kind of always done, right? But if you give them flexibility, if you give them better accessibility, that kind of helps, you know, sweeten the deal for them. So it's just kind of like, hey, so, you know, we want to do all of this with our file structure. We want to do all, we have these different technologies that talk to each other.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to have to be, you know, connected to stuck to an on-prem, right?
Right.
So pushing things and this is part of me, I guess, being new generation, but I'm also like my mindset being my first job I was at, we were all in the cloud. Right. And so I've been exposed to cloud technologies and just the growth of what they can do. Like even in the past, like 4 or 5 years that I've been working in IT is just great, you know, virtualization and, you know, the security part of me. Cause now, so my specialty is security. But now, because I'm in my position, I really do have to keep in mind, you know, and I think I was listening to one of your podcasts earlier, you talked about business continuity. Mm-hmm. What's the baseline that I need to have running to make sure that my company can keep running, keep making money, right? Because at the end of the day, IT is really a support branch of pretty much every company and organization, right? And so you have to be willing to help people. You also have to be willing to give them solutions that are actually trying to solve the actual problems that they're having. That makes sense.
No, it absolutely does. There might even be some things there that as you connect with sales and growth of the company that you can actually offer up that actually do help grow the company and provide business development.
Exactly.
I just know my team comes up with crazy things on a daily basis. Like, hey, you got to check this out. Like, mm-hmm. What? Oh, you got to check this out. Like, check out this, what we did with this AI and these different APIs, and we put them all together and look at what it popped out. Like, oh, that's pretty wild. And then my question is like, okay, can you put it into action so we stop talking about things and can we actually do something? Correct. I have 1,000 ideas on a daily basis. How do we actually execute and make something, you know, do something?
Exactly. After a certain point, that having ideas phase, you really do just need to dig in your heels and commit, right? It's like, okay, we have this idea. We have a plan of action of how we're going to execute this idea. You know, we have our testing phases of however we're going to put this into motion. Whether that be a security tool, you know, a BI tool for the sales folks so they can get better numbers on what's going on in the company.
Data. So since you didn't go into data, because that's not a real thing and that's just a side gig for everyone else. No. Have you found any, I don't know, I'm just fascinated with data because we have a ton of data. The show itself has a ton of data from, I don't know, I think we're nearing 300 interviews, all transcribed, various different pain points and things and themes that are common throughout IT leadership. There's like this treasure trove of stuff there that I would love to be able to take action on. And I'm just wondering if there's anything that you've found lately or tools that you've used that have been very useful. Did you say Power BI? I can't remember who said it. Anyways.
I did say BI for business intelligence. Yeah. I don't have any specific tools as of now, but I do know that really a lot of people tend to be very visual. I'm very visual. So when people are explaining concepts to me, you know, sometimes I like to take a whiteboard and draw out what we're talking about, right? So it helps me understand it a bit better. So you might have a treasure trove of data somewhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have like good reporting, if you don't have a good way to represent that data, it's just kind of numbers. But when you have that and you give the people in your organization the ability to utilize that, it helps them to make decisions that are their data-driven decisions, right? So they might have a gut feeling about something, and if they've got data to back that up, they might make a better business decision.
The thoughts that you just made me think of were, how are we moving the bar in XYZ areas? And then if IT can provide XYZ areas and then maybe even a Z, hey, I don't know if this is important to you, but have you noticed that we've got this metric also? I don't know if it's important. Is it?
Right.
Yeah. That's just, it sounds so basic and simple, but how many IT guys are just worried about, our KPIs around tickets and how we're doing this, that, and everything else when there could be a, what do we call that? Paradigm shift.
Yeah, truly just a paradigm shift to where, you know, the stereotypical IT person is offering more to an organization, more than just, you know, help me fix my computer or maintain my systems or something like that. Really utilizing the tools that are out there to enhance business, right? And I say that, and I guess part of it is with my cybersecurity background, we work a lot with documentation, standards, compliance, all that sort of thing, right? So,
oh, you guys got that. That's nice. We have a security. We actually have a security compliance. Keep going.
Yeah. The whole mindset of cybersecurity being, you really need to tailor it to the business that you're in, right? So I could come in heavy handed, lock everything down, but then my users are really annoyed with how locked down everything is, or it literally stops business correctly. Right.
Yeah, classic, typical. Yep.
Yeah. So it's very much tailoring security to your business case. And in much the same way, I really feel like that's a concept you could apply across all of IT, you know, and everybody really gets focused on the thing they're doing. Right. And kind of something I've been, you know, working on, you know, coming into a directorship, I really have to keep my mind on the big picture. Okay, so we're going to put this tool in. It's offering these benefits. Who does it affect? You know, it's affecting everybody positively, hopefully, right? You know, is this the best use case for our business? Is this going to improve things overall? What other exigent things do I need to think about? Do I need to think about access? Do I need to think about the security side of that? It's a lot to think about. But eventually, yes, like I said earlier, you do have to commit. And I've taken a very collaborative approach in my current role, mm-hmm. because at the end of the day, you know, I could pick the tool for people, but it might not be the best tool. It's very much, it's smarter long-term, in my opinion, just to have people test in different departments, test drive the tool that they're going to use, or test drive a few, look at the cost benefits analysis between all of them, and then you can all make a decision. It might take a bit longer, but it'll be a better informed decision.
And it takes full response. It takes some of the responsibility off of your shoulders. So, right. Hey, look, guys, I'm advising here. I'm advising on the different things that we have available. Let's test them out. Let's go through a proof of concept phase, whatever it is. And then you decide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because at the end of the day, you know, if you're going to be, let's say, writing a contract for a tool for a few years, you want it to be a good tool and you want the people using it to be happy with it. Like, you know, they might need some retraining. That's fine. That can be set up too. But you have to make sure that whatever you're doing, and I mean, this is my short experience thus far. You are getting input from, you know, people in management, or hearing from people like working with the tool every day, you know, getting feedback and figuring out, okay, so we're having, you know, these problems, these issues, or these are some really positive things that we're hearing about this.
What do you do for that? Walk around, ask people, send out a survey. What are we doing?
You know, we've got a bunch of tools in the works. One of the pushes to cloud that we did have was more out of necessity. I do plan on kind of utilizing, we're kind of like a Microsoft sweet shop. Utilizing something like Microsoft Forms, trying to get feedback from people. I actually do this with our security awareness training.
Uh-huh.
Security awareness training tends to get lumped in with HR training. Mm. So people kind of, they're not thrilled with it when they do have to do it. The training I've generally picked has been a bit more interactive and a bit easier to digest. You know,
as, what do you guys use? Know Before or something?
Know Before. Yeah.
How could I should have like the vendor guest section of the show.
Yeah, there you
what
go.
What vendor do you use?
Yeah.
Know Before is pretty good.
Yeah. Know Before, like I went to a fantastic presentation on security awareness training at a conference a couple of years back. And,
uh-huh.
you know, I had done the security awareness training where we have people come in batches and we're like, hey guys, this is why we do this and this, right? And it wasn't super effective. So at this conference, the presenter was like, look, there's all these options for security awareness training and they're way more engaging. And it's not going to take, you know, 2-3 hours of like a slideshow. It's like maybe a half hour, 45 minutes. It's much more engaging. Some of them have a plot. Some of them are funny.
Yeah, yeah.
And people connect with that a lot better, which means, you know, hopefully they're doing much better.
On it really shouldn't be lumped in with HR. Because HR sometimes is like the biggest weakness. They're sometimes the biggest weakness. Like, hey, send us all the W-2s. We need them right away. We send them.
Right.
You know, like, the president said we need to send all the, you know, his email spoofed or something like that with like a .org or something, you know, and then, you know, quick, send us all the W-2s. We need them, and send a gift card to Charlie.
Yeah.
Huh.
And that's really just a training thing, you know. I have an education in this, and I've also got the practical experience in it. It's what I see. I know what I know. Now I really have to communicate what I know, and it has to be something that people understand, right? And
they have to care, though. They really have to care also, because in every organization, it's the 80-20 rule. And in this case, I would guess 20% of the people actually really care about security. And I would say the other 80% are kind of like, we got to do this. You know, so there's like, that's kind of like the biggest, weakest link. And then I've had some people say, well, we're just going to make it part of their employee agreement that they have to sign off on. But it is a, it is humans is the biggest weakness for sure.
And that's kind of the beauty of cybersecurity. You could have the most locked down fortified system in the world, and one person could actually just let someone in, you know?
So back to this anomaly of why you said you think there's a shortage of cybersecurity people, which I would completely disagree with. I think it's overloaded and flooded right now. I think it's like so many people trying to go, I want to go into cyber. I want to go into cybersecurity. I want to be an ethical hacker. I want to be this, I want to be a pen tester. I just want to, to me, I feel like there's an overload of those people. So I don't know. And products and vendors, my gosh, there's an overload. The security vendors calling me on it. Can I be on your show? Can I do this? No, you can pay. Well, maybe, I guess, if you want to, come on in a vendor agnostic standpoint and battle it off with all the other guys, and you guys each can pay me $5,000 and we'll do a podcast. But no, for anyone listening out there that wants to come on the show, and but really, I mean, the security, I don't even like when people ask me for stuff, I'm like, look, whatever. Mike Johnson on show 259 said he only needs 3 vendors and these are his top 3. I was like, so maybe, I don't even try to get into suggesting. I do have a top 5, I would say top 5, security vendors, and you probably only need 5, and those 5 will probably take care of the majority of and everything else is kind of up to you to manage your particular organization and all the security policy. And I don't know if you got certifications and all that other type of stuff. Know before is definitely probably, they're up there on the list. I don't know where I've totally forgot where we were going with this. Oh, your shortage of security people. Why do you think there's a shortage of security people?
So I think there's a shortage of qualified people going into these security positions. Now, that's not to like throw stones and say, just because you want to be an ethical hacker, you can't do it. But
there's a shortage of positions. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
There's a shortage of well-paid positions where they don't. It's like have you read the Phoenix Project or listened to the Phoenix Project? If you haven't, you need to. Everyone listening, if you have not heard the Phoenix Project yet, and again, I should get paid for advertising this way. It's like it's like the Braveheart or the Star Wars of, the IT world books that you need to read or something. You know what I mean? But security is kind of like, like the redheaded stepchild, like in every organization type of thing,
And it's
that exists in that book, as like, right. So it's kind of like, oh, get out. Oh, great. So here comes security screwing up the whole implementation. We just got all the coding done and here comes security, So anyways.
So and it's but the thing is that I love about security is so IT is this, I had a friend who told me this when I was first really trying to break in IT. He's like, IT is like a vast ocean, right? Like if we have all the oceans of the world, IT is like all the oceans of the world. And cybersecurity is like, pick an ocean, right? Mm-hmm. Within security, you've got your ethical hackers and your pen testers. I would say that's probably the most visible type of position that people want because, everybody wants to be a hacker. But I've talked with folks who do that. That's their job. It's not just hacking. They will literally go, break into a building. They will walk into buildings. They will be like, how far can I get into this building without getting stopped?
Oh, I love it. I love it. Your dad's your dad is a salesperson. You've probably got all kinds of... I started out at a Cisco startup years ago when I first stopped working for Starbucks. Because that's the only job you could get right out of college, which probably a lot of people relate to nowadays. Why did they pay for all this college education? I'm working at Burger King. Nothing wrong with I could use a Whopper right now.
Yeah.
The vegans are like, hey.
Yeah.
You mean the what do they call that? Zero meat burger? Anyways, miracle something. Anyways, very off topic. But yeah, there you go. Train of thought completely gone. I don't know where we're going. Remind me, where was I going with that?
We're talking about the ocean that is cyber.
Oh, yes. So when you said the ocean, but just real quick, I just want to know you. I'm a very visual guy. So these things went, this is what went through my mind when you said the ocean. You're probably too, again, too young. May the Lord above bless you. Did you ever see that movie Waterworld? Do you remember that movie Waterworld?
Never saw it, but I've seen clips.
This is what I imagined. Like Waterworld is Microsoft. And then there's like all these other like little products and security things that are like the pirates, you know, like battling Microsoft to get a seat at the table. Anywho. Okay, yep. Go on. So now back to reality,
Within cybersecurity itself as a field, you know, I would say there's probably a shortage of people wanting to do compliance, where you're kind of a lawyer in a lot of ways. You're looking at these standards. You're looking at how do we do this? Are we doing this? Are we compliant with this? If an auditor comes to me today and asks me these hard questions, am I going to pass or not?
Definitely not.
No one's passing. But say what you want about cybersecurity standards. Uh-huh. They provide a good baseline for what you can look forward to and achieve, because generally they've been collaboratively looked at and constructed by professionals from all different industries and all different fields. And I mean, you know, if you're talking about, people think security, they think like, you know, corporate cybersecurity. There's operational technologies, you know, factories that if an attacker gets into their network, they can, you know, damage heavy equipment. They can cause heavy equipment to malfunction.
Yeah.
I mean, you see this with, so this is what actually got me.
They can hack a radiation machine. They can hack in a hospital, like some sort of IoT radiation machine that's like supposed to be targeting. I've heard that a pacemaker's been hacked. I don't know how. I don't know why.
Ransomware has shut off, or it's locked down, like monitors at hospitals. There was a story a couple years back where these attackers ransomware to a hospital. And the hospital told them, dude, there's a guy on life support here and I can't monitor him or help him. So the attackers gave them the key for free for once back to actually like unlock it. Right. But the person passed away. So, you know, it's real life ramifications. But going back to the whole shortage.
My sister's an RN. Her hospital was hit by ransomware and they refused to, pay the ransom, but they were down for like 10 days.
Yeah.
Like something insane, like just something at like a hospital. I mean, it was in Vermont. So, I mean, how many people actually live in Vermont? So I think it wasn't as bad as it was, but it was a hospital, like a full fledged hospital down for like days. And I just remember what I thought of the physical attack, because I used to have fun just, like, let's just see how far I can get in for my clients. Like, let's just see, hey, you want to just check your, let's just check your current providers and see if they're secure. And I would just call up XYZ provider or vendor and just say that I'm not that person. I'm so-and-so calling in. I'm really in a hurry because we're redoing this, like, you know, network or something, blah, blah, blah. I need all the static IP ranges. I need blah, blah, blah. Okay, sure. Here they are.
Yeah, just
like introduce
a stressful situation, you know, with very little time or like room to argue, and you know, social engineering defeats.
What's your address, sir? Yes, it's here. Blah, 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 zip code this. Oh, okay, here's your information. It's really like I think vendors could be one of the weakest links.
Supply chain.
Yes. And ironically, also a salespeople that want to try and sell a deal that will give out customer information very easily. I've seen that. I've seen people just haphazardly unplug things physically in a data center. And, you know, it's just like, whoops,
Well, yeah, or it's like my favorite I've heard, which is kind of like an outdated solution, is I'll unplug the infected computer from the network, and I'm like, it's over already. You know, It's all over. If it's ransomware, it's all over the network already. It's worming its way through the whole thing. It doesn't matter if you unplug the infected endpoint.
Speaking of vendors, I had a personal one myself that I'm really still really, really, I'm really irked, I'm really ticked off about this. I could probably think of some other words to describe these people. I had personally a malware attack that took down our website. That was like, I was literally losing my mind because we had like podcasts that had just gotten released. And it was trying to find someone that wants to come on the team at Dissecting Popular IT Nerds and be our coder and web developer. Looking for that. This is an advertisement, trying to find the right guy. It's not a WordPress guy, because WordPress has so many plugins and everything. So there's one vulnerability on one of the plugins that wasn't updated. Malware comes in, takes down the website. Here's what the vendor does. We're going to bring in another security vendor to clean up all the malware and, you know, blah, 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 right? So great. We got security cleaning up the malware. That's awesome. Got to take a backup. Got to take a mirror image. Multiple backups. Everything's cleaned. Everything's backed up. Now we suggest that you move to, you know, better servers, more secure, faster, more resources, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Sounds great. Sounds great. Okay. An extra $100 like a month. Okay. No problem. What do they do but restore the older backup and bring all of the malware back? And all the malware back. So now got to go back to security vendor again, clean up the malware, all that stuff. And that guy's like, well, we just got done working for you in an emergency situation. This is not an emergency again, because you guys are idiots. So you're just gonna have to wait in line. That's the type of thing that vendors, that even though it's not your fault, it's another vendor's fault, they still look at it as your fault. So anyways.
Yeah. Sorry,
that's my gripe with,
it's one of my
personal gripes.
But the thing is, it's challenging. It's challenging because a lot of vendors, depending on who they are, they're probably dealing with issues and attacks, not justifying their actions against you, Phil. But
yes,
it's the skill set needed to be in cybersecurity. And this is kind of why I say there is a quote unquote shortage, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You really do kind of have to have some level of technical depth to really get into security, or you have to be able to get into the compliance side of things and be able to kind of comprehend how to apply standards and such.
At Dissecting Popular IT Nerds, we expect to win, and we expect our IT directors to win. And one of those areas where we know that we can help you win is internet service providers. As an IT director tasked with managing internet connectivity, few vendor relationships can prove more painfully frustrating than the one with your internet service provider. The array of challenges seems never ending, from unreliable uptime and insufficient bandwidth to poor customer service and hidden fees. It's like getting stuck in rush hour traffic. Dealing with ISPs can try one's patience even on the best of days. So whether you are managing one location or 100 locations, our back office support team and vendor partners are the best in the industry. And the best part about this is none of this will ever cost you a dime, due to the partnership and the sponsors that we have behind the scenes at Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. Let us show you how we can manage away the mediocrity and hit it out of the park. We start by mapping all of the available fiber routes, and we use our $1.2 billion in combined customer buying power and massive economy of scale to map all of your locations, to overcome construction fees, to use industry historical data, to encourage providers to compete for the lowest possible pricing, to negotiate the lowest rates guaranteed, and to provide fast response times in hours, not days. And we leverage aggregators and wholesale relationships to ensure you get the best possible pricing available in the marketplace. And on top of all of this, you get proactive network monitoring and proactive alerts so that you're not left calling 1-800-GO-POUND-SAND to enter in a ticket number and wonder, why is my internet connection down? In short, we are the partner that you have always wanted, who understands your needs, your frustrations, and knows what you need without you having to ask. So We're still human, but we are some of the best and we aim to win. This all starts with a value discovery call where we find out what you have, why you have it, and what's on your roadmap. All you need to do is email internet@popularit.net and say, I want help managing all of my internet garbage. Please make my life easier and we'll get right on it for you. Have a wonderful day.
Maybe the final point, which I would love your input on, unless you ascribe to any conspiracy theories that we would like to talk about on the show, because we usually have the conspiracy theories section. I pretty much subscribe to them all, except for the lizard people one. That one's a little bit too far for me. What I find is very interesting, because there's like, okay, what you're saying is kind of like, well, if I'm going to go to medical school, I'm going to go to general medical school. I'm going to go to medical school. Or I'm going to go to college first. I'm going to focus on whatever. Then I'm going to graduate college and I'm going to go to medical school. I'm going to go through the general securities, right? General security. You've got to have a roadmap. You've got to have security policies in place. You've got to know what this is. You got to know what that is. There's all these different layers of security. So and then you go to the general first 2 years of medical school. And then eventually you pick, I want to be a urologist, or I want to be a, I don't know, any other. My dad was a urologist. That's why I thought, that's why that came to mind. You know what it's like growing up in a house with a urologist? It's very funny. So then you pick that. So that's kind of like the metaphor that I'm thinking of, like where you're going with this. But here's something else that's very interesting, which might be different, because a lot, and I think this is beneficial to the listeners to the show, is many IT directors are the IT director or the IT leader. The more that you study or have, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, certifications or a knowledge base in a specific layer of security, the more valuable you are to any given company. Because that comes, because most likely, you guys do not have, or it would take a lot for you to budget a CISO role at a petroleum company. Maybe they would. Maybe, you know what I mean? But I doubt it. In mid-market manufacturing, technology, retail space, all these different places in America, you have to do, IT has to do a lot with a little, and they have to support a lot of people, and they have to create the digital revolution and make people believe in it, and they have to show people that you can do more with technology and it's a business force multiplier, not a cost center that should be pigeonholed in a line item on just a small percentage line item on the P&L. So I like it. I like what you're saying. And I think, what would you say are the most important layers of security that any IT director or IT leader should go get?
I mean, I think the most important layer of security at the end of the day is being able to communicate the importance of security to the rest of the company. I mean, on a technical level, you know, you have your endpoint layer, you have your backups. The biggest threat I would see outside of kind of an endpoint layer problem would really be, you know, data exfiltration, insider attacks, that sort of thing. Identity and access management is massive. Most of the time, if an attacker does get into a system, they're going to use credentials that are somewhere in the system that they can use, and it really covers their tracks because it might look like normal activity, quote unquote.
It's very good.
Yeah,
very good. So how, you know, I'm just like, how does it's kind of like, how did a hospital get taken out?
Exactly. I mean, I got into cybersecurity. I took a class my last year of my bachelor's. Mm-hmm. And what hooked me was, have you ever heard of Stuxnet?
Yes.
So for anybody.
Wait a second. Is that the Iranian thing where we threw that's where we threw the little, the USB, the USB outside.
Yeah, we totally didn't do that. But
I thought it was like common knowledge that we just dropped that little USB outside.
Yeah, it's attributed.
We have a show on that, by the way.
Yeah. But Stuxnet really showed me, it's like, look, like this has impact. It really, I mean, think about that. Nuclear uranium refinement equipment just gets a little wobble from a program, and then it just destroys, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars of equipment, or however much it was. I don't know.
Yeah. But
all of that.
And it was so easy. And look at how it happened too. It wasn't like, I just dropped a USB. If that's really the story, yeah. I just outside the building.
never plug a USB in that you found in the
there's handfuls of USBs. Why is there so many USBs outside today? I don't know. Let's see what's on one of these. Is this from a vendor? Is this from a vendor?
And
or we used to give those out. People used to give those out at like IT Expo or something. Here, take our USB and plug this in with all of our information on it. It's free. You know what I mean?
No.
That used to be like the give out. That was the giveaway.
No. Well, and I tell people too, it's like, this wasn't, you know, the nature of cyber attacks has changed. It really used to be more so like they wouldn't steal crazy huge amounts of money. And now you have attackers who are like, hey, man, I'm just going to blow up your entire infrastructure and all of your backups and have a nice day. There's attacks that are just that malicious. I mean,
I just retire, and I'm sure a lot of companies would too. Like someone just come to a grinding halt. Me, I'd just be done. I don't care. So whatever. I'm done with the podcast. Days are done. Have fun, guys.
Yeah.
Or we're starting from zero again. Don't care.
Yeah, the just like, you know, double extortion. They'll take all your data and then they'll tell you, hey, I'm going to publish this on the dark web. I'm going to publish everything unless you pay us. So it's no longer, hey, your stuff's locked down, pay me. It's your stuff's locked down and I'm going to publish it for the world to see, pay me.
Yeah, and I have no, and you really have no way of knowing whether they will or will not anyways.
Correct.
The, yes, yes. We used to talk, I just remember back in the day, we used to talk about packet sniffers. Yeah, you never know. Someone could be putting a packet sniffer on there and sniffing packets off. You got to put headers and footers on that and shut that down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it has been a pleasure having you on the show. What is the what's the key to you? Because you know the what's the key to having fun? I guess in IT, I guess yours was like just like it from day one. But any advice to anyone out there?
I would say the key to having fun in IT is just being open to learning, you know, new parts of IT, learning new tools, learning new technologies. I mean, I had a really good conversation with one of my best friends. This was back in college, and it was like, you have to be a lifelong learner, because the stuff that I learned in college, the basic core concepts are the same. The application of said concepts is just completely different now. It just evolves constantly.
That is the number one advice that everyone gives, lifelong learner. I would say that if we had to like match it all together, like that would be it.
Yeah.
For sure. But I think layer and like you said, and that goes hand in hand with being able to add. We used to do before, and it's the show's been around for what, 3 years now. So we used to talk about like, oh, does certifications really matter? Does an MBA really matter? In your case, I'm sure you'd say, I don't know. Did the MBA matter? I don't know. Probably definitely makes you look, you're definitely a big deal. You're definitely a bigger deal.
Yeah.
But now I'm going to be start leaning more towards, I think certifications matter when it makes you more of a well-rounded leader. Like, I don't think, you know, like the Cisco certification or this certification, but the security certs, the maybe if you've got security clearance, things like that, an extra layer of security clearance, CMMC, which I ran into the other day, different secure, all of that matters.
Yes. I think, you know, and it really just depends on what direction you want to take. Do you want to be more well-rounded in security? Do you want to be an ethical hacker only? You know, they like...
No. Do not do that. That's too hard. It's a dream. That's like, just like, I'm going to be an ethical hacker. Yeah, okay. I'm sorry. Everyone's mad at me. What are you talking about? I am an ethical hacker. I'm already doing it, Phil. Like, come on the show. Any ethical hackers making a lot of money out there right now, I want to have you on the show. That is your invitation. But you know, it's layered on top of a general leadership piece. I'm just saying, for people that want to get to a C level or want to be in a leadership position or want to build a business and want to someday have a way of maybe not just having a job your whole life, and you want to, I don't know, be part of a startup or start your own company and cash out with billions eventually. I don't know. That would be cool.
Mm-hmm.
Are you a golf fan? Did you watch the Masters?
I don't follow golf closely. I am aware I need to get into golf.
No. I'm not saying you have to get into golf. I'm a jiu-jitsu guy. So like I grew up from a family of doctors. So everyone golfed, you know, like.
Yeah. My brothers and my dad golf. I want to be golfing with them more because it is a fun time.
And all the vendors golf, all the, you know, all exactly. that type of stuff. But yeah, there, I can't remember who the like caddy was this weekend, but there was like a $1 billion caddy. Like he filled in for the caddy or something, but he was like a billionaire. So it was kind of funny that the caddy was, you know, was like the richest guy on the course, but he like, you know, had some cloud company that he sold or something. Probably.
Yeah.
Making myself look very ignorant right now. Thank you so much for being on Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. It was a pleasure.
Yeah. Thank you, Phil.